Mark, welcome to the show. Always great to have you with us.
Appreciate it, Steve. You got me a little fired up listening to the highlights. I didn't get to hear them this weekend, so that was phenomenal.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate that. And, you know, somebody had to say words, so it was me. Mark, you watch the performance. At this point, it's all the cream of the crop. Boise State's really good. Why was Penn State better?
That Tom Allen was absolutely just so illuminating after the game, in talking about the defensive performance and plan that they had for Ashton Gentry. It's not that there was not respect for that for him as a player. I think they went into that game maybe elevating him to a level, like to almost to a vaunted level, to the point where they're saying, I mean, Tom Allen said after the game, we want to swarm him. I mean, this is the best running back. And you said it. This is the best running back we're going to see in years. He has to be swarmed. They tailored a defensive game plan around him. And it was out of respect. But I think there was also a sense of, I mean, disrespect probably goes too far, but there was a sense of maybe a little jaw-jutting on both sides of the football, I think, for Penn State. Defensively, saying why, you know, we've got a pretty good defense. Why would it be so surprising if we could shut down the Heisman Trophy runner-up? And offensively, Jawan Sider said it. We think we got pretty good running backs, too. And if either one of these guys got 30 carries a game like Ashton Gentry would, you'd probably be talking about them like Ashton Gentry. So I think the game plan being centered on him from both sides of the ball, to me, was one of the more interesting elements of that game, that post game, and then they just executed it about as well as you could for the most part, and in doing so, especially defensively, being able to do so with Abdul Carter playing, I think, about 18 snaps before he had to go out, and then you just have to shift on a dime to what Tom Allen called their plan B on defense, which included, you saw, I mean, Vanover, Smith Gilbert, Max Granville, Dom DeLuca, kind of changing roles, a little bit adjusting. The adjustment there, I think that pivot was so important. The way they were able to pivot without Abdul Carter and still, for the most part, control Gentry.
Well, they had to. They've already had to make one major pivot this season. That was because of KJ Winston.
Right.
Because they went 8.5 months planning a certain way to play, and 5 quarters into the season, they had to change it. So what does that tell you about the adaptability and the minds on the defensive side that they can make adjustments like that?
But yeah, those are two really unique situations because you're adapting KJ. The loss of KJ is long-term.
Yes.
Like you have to readjust your defense, the way Jalen Reed plays, the way Zachy Wheatley plays, behind them the linebackers, how you're going to play them. Dom DeLuca becomes a bigger presence, and he's got to take on a larger role and has done so exceptionally well. In this case, this was a really micro and really acute and really quick pivot because they had Abdul Carter he was on Ashton Gentry duty, essentially. Tom Allen kind of framed it that way. So we wanted him close to the line of scrimmage. We wanted him close to the ball. He had to be around the ball a lot. And then you lose that. And you lose the player who's best capable of performing that role on your defense. The quick pivot that they did this time kind of, in a way, mirrored what they did with Winston, but they had to do it so rapid fire. And to be able to get that, I think, was really impressive. That, you know, Abdul was off the field for the touchdown drive when the fullback went in and scored. But after that, you know, they did settle in. They gave away some passing yards, tight end catches, that sort of thing. I think Mattson had about 300. Felt like they were willingly, giving those yards up just so they knew that Gentry was not going to bounce off anything. And that was one of the great things. To me, the defensive play that really woke my eyes to this game and what they were capable of doing, I think it was the first carry of the second series when Denai Dennison basically got back points just throwing Gentry to the ground. And that was eye-opening. This is a defense that has come with a plan and a mission.
Right. Somebody had called into the pregame show, and it was a lot about, and they were asking about Gentry, and justifiably so, right? And I finally said, you know what, let's stop this right here. I said, Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton are not chopped liver on the other side. I want to talk about Allen first. I thought, and you didn't get a chance to see it, Mark, but in Monday's practice, Jack and I looked at him and said, he looks exceptionally quick. What was your thought on watching Catron Allen on the biggest stage of his career do what he did?
Was exceptionally quick. He was as fast as I've seen him make some cuts. There was, I think, maybe his first carry, one of a very early carry, got outside, maybe a 10 or 11 yard play. And there was a burst that had a little bit of Singleton in it. You know, just that little bit of hop that you thought, wow, he looks like he's got a step. And then it kept getting better, you know, just better and better from that. But he was just gashing 8 yards a carry. One of his more underrated plays was, you know, the offense had a rough second quarter and some penalties. And Drew, there was a stretch of, I think, 7 straight incompletions. He got sacked. And then they had the busted play touchdown at Boise State, the 58-yarder.
Right.
The first play of the next drive, I think it was first down they ran, and I think Catron picked up 9, and that was a jump start. And that led to Drew's big conversion, the big rushing conversion on third down, then with the defensive holding, and then the touchdown, second touchdown to Tyler Warren. He was such Catron just... He seemed to be a jump start, like a kickstart to everything. Mm-hmm. And it just, he seemed, you know, just kept moving the offense in the direction that they wanted to go. And that seemed to kind of like be the stepladder that that Nick got on at the end.
Yeah, I was going to say, because at the end, he'd been the guy that had been sort of bottled up all night. And then when he broke it, I mean, Mark, you and I both know that's the home run hitter he is. That's his longest run from scrimmage this season. And the irony of it is that if you watch the play.
The interesting thing to me, I didn't get the yardage. I think because we were, you know, on our corner of the end, it was hard to see. Catron broke one too. I thought it was 50.
Yeah, it was.
But I don't know the exact yardage of the one that came back too. I mean, he was going to be close to 200 yards without breaking the big one, too. And Jaywon Sider was, he kind of lamented that because he said, you know, Nick got his big one tonight. Nick got the big one in the Rose Bowl. Going back to 19, Journey Brown got the big one against in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
And he said, I wish Nick could have had that because that would have been kind of his signature moment. And I don't know if Catron is necessarily the signature moment kind of running back. But he just does so much consistently well. And, I mean, you can't ask for much more of him in the postseason. He's got 328 yards in 3 postseason games. He has been outrageously good at the best time of the year.
Right, which is exactly what they needed. Warren makes 2 terrific catches in the game for touchdowns. And then Evans, look, if you had to pick a guy that can take the top off on this team, it's Evans. The fact that they were both so involved in what happened out there, what does that give in terms of the offensive versatility for this team? Because Warren's been the given all year.
They need something else besides Tyler Warren. And it was interesting that there were not many targets in that game. I think it was 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
Got targeted for touches for receiving touches. Warren and it was Warren, Wallace, Evans, and Luke Reynolds. They didn't throw to the backs.
Right.
Really didn't throw to much of anybody else. It was half the targets went to Tyler Warren.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that going in, there needs to be somebody else who can make those plays. And for Omari to be the player that you know he could be, he's got that. He's got the 40-yard, 50-yard downfield race catch in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
He just has to hit that. I mean, getting that for the touchdown, that's the kind of play that opposing defensive coordinators, the next two, you know, next one or two, whoever, you know, however many they play and whoever they see, has to look at number 5 and say, if this kid's racing downfield, we got to get a body on him and say if he has to be there something. Because he can stretch us out, and that's a big problem. And that gives you Tyler Warren. underneath. And then maybe, like I said, there were no touches for Liam Clifford, Julian Fleming in this game. If you forget about them, who knows? I mean, I don't know if USC forgot about Julian Fleming a couple of months ago. Feels like a couple of years ago now. Yep. But Penn State's not here without his two fourth down catches against USC on that last drive. Mm-hmm. That's where getting people involved, they don't have to be involved necessarily every week. But I think it was really important to see Omari there. It might not have to be Omari on January 9th. Maybe it's Liam, maybe it's Julian, Trey. Maybe it is Omari again. Doesn't matter. But there needs to be somebody else with Tyler Warren.
This is a grind. All right.
For us. I can't imagine what it's like for them.
Right. Well, I'm saying that's why, you know, when you talk with a reporter understands, like, from their job, the grind of it, which then gives at least people perspective on the grind it is for the players and for the teams. How important has it been that this has been James' program that is from day one starting in Ireland 1-0, and at this time of the year in this grind, it is heavily emphasized that it is still 1-0?
If you don't do that for 11 years, then I don't think you're able to get kids to buy into it consistently year after year. What I mean by that is James has made that kind of the bedrock, the foundation of the program. Right. And even though it might come across as just lip service to outside people and coach speak, and every coach has their own terminology for 1-0. If you don't live it, then you can lose games like that. You can lose games that you're not supposed to lose. That was one of the really interesting things. I talked to, at the media day, and then, some coaches and players. I wish I could remember. There was one player I asked, how hard is it to, I think it was Devon J. Thomas. It was like, how hard is it to do this? How hard is it to live 1-0? And he said, it's not easy because it's a monotonous schedule. And we like to get out of our routines, right? Like, here in Arizona, I wanted to play golf, get out of my routine, eat Mexican food, right? Sure. That kind of thing. But they have such a routine that they live by that becomes embedded and just innate to them. And that's part of the reason you're 31-5 in regular season games over the last 3 years, losing just to Ohio State and Michigan. Right. If you're not 1-0 mentality, and if you're not 1-0 program convictions, that 31-5 becomes 28-8 because you've lost to Minnesota, or you've lost to Wisconsin, or you let a stray get away. And in 12-team playoff world, you can't let stray games get away. They haven't done it, and that's why they're here. In 12-team playoff world, when you got to play an extra game than other people or other teams might play, you can't let those two games get away. Right. Penn State can be, Penn State can be told, or it can be said about Penn State that they had the easier path than Oregon, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. That may be so with seeding and teams, but Penn State had to play two games. That's still difficult to do. You still have to win those two games to get here. But from the outside, if you look at brands and names and things like that, if you do that inside, you lose the game, and then you get people even angrier. So doing that so consistently, so monotonously, has got to be so difficult to me, but it's incredibly rewarding when you got confetti falling on your head.
There's no question about that. Also the fact that they've been spending their time practicing here, and they've been going to the bowl sites a couple of days ahead of time. What do you think it's helped just that they can stay here, spend time in their own bed, and not have to, and not go around hotels and so forth? I mean, do you think that's helped at all?
I think so, because it turns it into a road game.
Yeah.
And there's an ethos. There's a completely different ethos between bowl games and road games. They're playing bowl games right now. The whole concept of the bowl game in past is as the reward game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Joe Paterno used to take teams down before Christmas to
both
and spend almost, like, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks in Florida. I've had players tell me, God, we couldn't wait to leave Florida because we were down there for so long. But this is, you know, these playoff games are not necessarily, they're not rewards for good seasons in terms of a trip. They're rewards for good seasons in terms of winning a national championship. So it's really important. And the players, I think, probably pivoted really easily to this. Maybe the coaches and staff, it might have been harder because you have the concept of what a bowl game is and what a bowl trip is. I think just for the players, they talked about it like going to USC. They really did. That the mindset was exactly the same. So older players have more bowl experience, so they probably had to do a little bit more mind training in this. But I think for the younger players, there's, you know, this is just this. Yeah, they're playing road games.
I mean, Mark, it's interesting you mentioned that. James talked to the players about it being a business trip, and he said the message was mostly for the older players because the younger players don't know any better than what they're doing right now.
Right.
So, I mean, I thought that was interesting. Mark?
Hey, and yeah, appreciate it. Thanks.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Mark. We're not done. Go ahead.
Yep. No, that's what I just think that to me was one of the really more interesting things. I think I did a story about their whole LTFI thing coming from the Fiesta Bowl, just their newest 1-0 that kind of went viral. And for the player, that's more of a fan thing. It's interesting. That was one of the points the players made. Is like that we do that already.
Yeah.
Like we lock in already. We see James that way already. And it's been really good for fans to see him that way. That was one of the curious things to me. But Sal Wormley, so if we, you know, when they arrived, I guess whatever date it was, I think the 28th, maybe, when they arrived in Phoenix, it was just like they were there for, they had a couple hours, team meeting, dinner, bed.
Yeah.
It was not bowl trip. So they're really getting the full treatment, I think, of the concept of not just even now road game, but playoff road game, and how that is just a completely different animal and concept than bowl trip.
You're the best, my man. Thank you so much, Mark. It was great to see you out there.
Yeah.
Looking forward to Miami.
Miami.
Yep, see you in Miami. Thanks.
Thanks.
Mark Wolgenrich, half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.